Good morning. Welcome to the talk on F-sharp 3.0. So, last day of tech ed, morning session. I don't know when you had your coffee, so let's ease into this, all right? Okay, you're all drinking your coffee now. It will kick in by the time I am done this little intro part here. So, I've met a ton of really interesting people. And whenever I meet someone who's like kind of quirky, witty, fun to talk to, I wonder, how well did that work out for them when they were younger? Like high school. Were they the popular kid? Or were they the one at the nerdy kids table? Now, I know you all will disavow any knowledge of such a table, but I assure you, it does exist. This isn't even me. I didn't even look that good, but I did have to wear that exact uniform. I am not joking. Did not help me feel any more cool. These days, I have dyed my hair purple. You probably can't tell. You can look at the end to verify. And purple has caught on. Have you noticed the Visual Studio 2012 logo is purple? It's almost the same exact shade as my hair. I am cool. Finally. Now, my friend Ali, on the other hand, has not had to resort to such measures like changing the color of his hair. He's basically always been cool. Granted, high school was a bit awkward for him, as it was for many of us. No, not you, sorry, me. But even back then, he was pretty much the coolest kid in the class. He was also the best programmer in the class. Even back then, he was so interested in compilers and programming languages that he would like disassemble his code, he would open up the executable in a binary view, and he would edit it. He did all kinds of crazy things. In high school, he knew things that professional C programmers didn't know. In fact, the teacher just basically decided to let him be the ad hoc instructor of their senior year high school programming class. So everyone just loved him. Everyone, that is, except Mo. You all had a kid like Mo in your class. You know the one who threw off the curve, but loved the fact that he threw off the curve? Didn't mind that no one liked him? Just had to be number one? Of course, he could not beat Ali, not in programming. He was number two, and that irked him. That really bothered him. No matter how much work he put into it, Ali was just really awesome. He still is, by the way. He has his own company. So, this rivalry is obviously one-sided. Ali is doing this stuff because he loves it. Mo just needs to be number one. So, Mo decides, no matter what it takes, he is going to get the best grade in the class for their senior year final project. He even allows himself to get an A- in another class in order to do this. This was unheard of for him, by the way. So they go in. This is way back in the day. By the way, Ali is older than me. This does not date me. I'm not even sure they were using version 2. They might have been on version 1. But I do know they were running DOS. I do know they had an old CRT. They did not have a projector, nothing fancy like that. So they would wheel around the CRT. A few kids in the front of the class could see what was going on. The kid at the front who was presenting would stand and explain to the teacher what he was doing. The ones in the back are probably goofing off. Mo insists on going first. Now, I left out a little part of the story. On his way in, Mo was sure he had nailed it, and he saw Ali. And he informed Ali that the class would now know who was the better programmer, and Ali didn't mind, right? But then Mo kept going on and on and on, just a little too long. That was a mistake, because I said Ali was brilliant. He is also a little devious. He's been known to pull a prank or two. So, they get up to the front of the class. Mo says, I have to go first. My project is the best. And the teacher reluctantly allows him to do so. And true to form, Mo, instead of running his program, first explains why it's awesome. So he brings up code files, brings up different functions, explains his data structures, talks about how great it is. And no one's paying attention at this point, except Ali. Ali is in the front row, reading the lines of code. Mo is so enthralled, so enraptured with impressing everybody, that he doesn't notice when Ali comments out one line of code. I said this was an old version of Turbo C. They didn't have syntax highlighting in that version. So he knew this would probably work. So the teacher says, Mo, get on with it. Run your program already. So he runs it, and the program exits immediately. Mo is completely flustered. He has no idea what's going on. And he reads through his code frantically, trying to figure out what's going on. He even sees the line of code where the comment was, but he misses it because he's so frantic about his grade. Finally, the teacher says, Mo, do this at the end. It won't affect your grade, I promise. At which point, Ali says, oh, wait a minute. Hey, I think I've seen this before. I think I know what you did wrong. Give me just one sec. Goes over, uncomments the line of code. No one even knows what he's doing. Compiles, runs, it works. Class is rolling. They're laughing like crazy. Mo is not amused, of course. And from that day forward, Mo did not brag about anything at all to Ali again, let alone programming. Now, why did I tell you this story? Aside from the fact that I was waiting for your coffee to kick in, there's a moral to this story that is, in fact, relevant today. Aside from the fact that you should not brag that you are number one until you actually can be number one, get that number one grade. So Mo should have waited. The moral of the story is that tools matter. Even back in high school, Ali realized that if you make it just a little easier to make a mistake, you're increasing the chances that the mistake will happen. Now, I said Mo was number two. He was a good programmer. If he had sat down for 30 more seconds when he was calm, he would have found the mistake. But what Ali realized, and what all of you know, is that when it's harder to do something, when it's easier to make a mistake, it's just a matter of time before something bad happens. That second one is a real photo. But it turns out what they defined as a preventable accident was oddly minor. Tools matter. Now, I want you to think beyond syntax highlighting. I gave you a very old example about a high school prank. I want you to think back to all the new versions of IDEs that you've used throughout the years. Each time you upgrade, you get features you hadn't thought of. Two versions later, you're expecting those features. When they're not there in some other program, you're like, what? This doesn't make any sense. Of course, why don't you have this? IntelliTrace, of course you gotta have IntelliTrace, my God. So there is always room for improvement. We can always make our tools better. And as you've seen with Visual Studio, we are improving our tools. F-sharp is no exception. But here, what we've done with F-sharp is we've integrated our language extension with our tooling. So we're bringing the two together. So F-sharp 3.0, the main takeaway message is that it will allow you to discover connected data and services without leaving your editor. What do I mean by that? I mean you literally paste in a URL into your editor, start typing, press dot, IntelliSense not only scans your file, not only your project, not only what's in your source control repository, it goes out to the web, figures out the web service protocol, pulls it back in a strongly typed way. It's as though you had that library on your local machine. It turns it into something that is just as though it were regular code in your project. Now, you all have used tools, I'm sure you've used tools, that help you get pretty far on this. So for now, I am going to ask you to take my word for it that this is taking it one step further. I will prove it with a demo, I promise. But this is, we're dialing it to 11, basically. I'm sorry, I just saw Spinal Tap again recently. So anyway, this is the talk, F-Sharp 3.0, where you get data, services, web, cloud, at your fingertips. What do I mean? In your editor, code-focused. You don't have to run some other tool. It's really great for people who love to program, like you all. My name's Donna Malagheri. I'm the program manager on the F-Sharp team. All right, so show of hands, how many of you have programmed in F-Sharp Hello World counts. Hello World counts. Okay. Okay. How many of you have programmed in F-sharp? Slightly more than Hello World. All right. This is good. I have slides for you. The F-sharp tagline is that F-sharp is a practical, functional first language that lets you write simple code to solve complex problems. Let me explain my terms here. Functional first means that you mainly code in terms of functions. Now, if you're familiar with C-sharp or VB, think delegates, think lambda expressions. You code primarily in terms of those rather than classes and objects. Functional first, not functional only, so you can use objects and classes. Practical probably speaks for itself, although there's many different definitions of practical. Complex problem also probably speaks to itself for itself. But what do I mean when I say simple code? What I mean is, code is simple if it matches your algorithm as directly as possible without you having to do extraneous things like boilerplate. When you get to express your algorithm as concisely as possible, then your code is simple. Our goal is, as Einstein said, keep it as simple as possible, but no simpler. I want you to think back on all the code that you've ever edited. Think about all the boilerplate you've ever seen. And think about how wonderful it would be if you didn't have to edit and wade your way through that. That's our goal. I'm not saying we're there. That is what we're trying to achieve. You can write code without all that boilerplate. Brief history. First, F-sharp started out as a research project by Don Syme, whose name you should know because he was a key designer of .NET generics, which I'm sure you all know and love and are using all the time. He was one of the key people to bring it to you. It's based on the functional language OCaml. It's pretty diverged pretty far now. It's made a product in Visual Studio 2010 because even as a research project, it had gathered a lot of interest. And as soon as it became a product, we saw that it became extremely popular for analytical computing. Not just analytical computing, mind you, but that seems to be the primary thing that people want to use it for. So we see industries such as banking, insurance, energy trading. There's even Xbox Live comparing scores on Xbox Live, engine written in F-sharp, these kinds of things. Think things where you're not doing user interaction, but you are transforming your data in various phases. Think back to classical algorithms. And you always have these, at least in part of your program. Well, usually. The reason that F-sharp has been successful in those domains is that it's fully interoperable with .NET. So you can call into .NET libraries and frameworks and call F-sharp code from .NET libraries and frameworks. So a lot of those examples I gave, some of them had legacy C-sharp VB code. They added in some F-sharp code for their business logic, the part where it made sense. For instance, the insurance company had to do some complicated analysis in order to give correct insurance rate information, and they found it was easier to express in an F-sharp, and it was easier to ensure that it was correct. Which brings me to my next point. It's strongly typed, has full type inference. Think var and C-sharp for type inference. Strongly typed, well, C-sharp is as well. F-sharp lets you express even more constraints on your types. One example is units of measure. Essentially, in F-sharp, if you define units of measure, you cannot add kilograms and ounces, dollars and euro, or any of your own custom types. And in the real world, it matters. These companies that I mentioned before have come back to us and said, you found bugs for us, thank you, at compile time. Tools matter. Okay, let me be a little bit more concrete about simplicity. I talked about boilerplate. Here is some object-oriented code. I happen to have used C#, but you would see this code in just about any object-oriented language. This is basically expressing the command pattern, which you may know from the Design Patterns book. Now, those of you who are expert C# and VB programmers know that you would never code it this way in C# or VB. You would use delegates, but that would be closer to the functional style. But I'm sure you have all encountered an over-engineered object-oriented system or two. So there's a lot of boilerplate. The real code is harder to read, harder to write. It's easier to make mistakes when maintaining it. And F#, on the other hand, you can express the same thing more directly. So, for instance, you can say that river command is a type. Command is just a name. It's just a tag that we're using when we define the type. And it's a function that takes a rover and returns nothing. That's what unit means. You can think of it as void. The arrow is telling you the function type. Now, when you define break command, you just write the definition of that. And same with term left. So it is pretty similar to delegates. But again, delegates, lambda expressions, are ideas that originated in functional languages. Let me give you another example where built-in support for a type makes a concrete difference in what your code looks like. This code is simple. It's not doing anything complicated. Swapping tuples, rotating an array of them. But it looks complex. This is not to pick on C#. In fact, it's way worse than Java. But because there's not built-in support for tuples, it just makes it that much harder to do things. So in F#, you get to write it on the left. And tuples are a great language feature. Now, the interesting thing to note is at the top, I have swap of X and Y, and I didn't put any types in. The compiler actually figures out that I did not put any constraints on X and Y, so it actually introduces generics for me without me even having to think about it. So sometimes you'll write a function and you'll realize you can make it even more generic than you realized. So you get to use generics without having to think about it as much. Now, you can write the types. I personally like to write them down. But you don't have to. You have options. Less boilerplate, simpler code, more concise, more closely mapping to the problem domain. Essentially, with F#, we want to make it easy for you to write declarative code. And this is in contrast to imperative code. Let me explain what I mean by these terms with a real-world example. Imagine you go into a coffee shop, and there's no menu. The only way that you can get a beverage is to write down instructions on how to get that beverage. So if you want a latte, you have to explain how to make an espresso. You have to explain how to steam the milk. You have to explain how you know when it's oversteamed. Granted, there are times where you have to do this in the real world. You have to tell them not to oversteam the milk, even when there is a menu. But this is an imperative style where you give instructions. You say how, not what. That's imperative. In contrast, when you say what, it's when you go into the coffee shop. You say, I want a latte. Not only do they give you a latte, especially in Seattle, they put a beautiful design on it, which you don't even have to define yourself. Now, you are probably familiar with at least a declarative language or two. For instance, if you know SQL, SQL is a declarative language. Think about when you're selecting a row from a database table, not only do you not have to even say what the table looks like for the query, you don't have to say anything about the database layout, you don't have to say anything about the sort function. It does it all for you. You say, this is what I want. The database figures out how to best give it to you. I mean, it even reorders your queries and figures out, oh, actually, you meant this other thing. I'll do it. So what, not how. You can write declarative code in any language. In fact, in C# with link, if you've used C# with link, you've probably seen how declarative your code becomes. You say select. You say where. You don't say iterate through this list, add up this variable. Your code becomes easier to read, write, and maintain. And in fact, in the case of link, with link providers, you can get optimizations for free. All right, let me show you some concrete F# code, because some of you don't know it yet. Oh, dear. All right, that worked. Okay. So here I'm in Visual Studio 2012 RC. Ignore this line at the top for the moment. Focus on this line here. This is a list expression. The brackets mean I'm defining a list within the brackets, I have an expression on what I want in the list. So this is saying I want a list with the elements 0 to 25. One of the nice things about F-sharp is that it has an interactive window. So I can right-click, say execute an interactive. Let me pin this here. And you can see it gave me, indeed, the list that I asked for. So for talks, it can be a little difficult to see the output of the interactive window. So I'm just going to display it in a really simple UI that I wrote, and that's why this load is up here at the top. That's just defining this WPF control. This is not part of F-sharp. This is part of my demo. So if it doesn't look good, that's why. And so it's showing me in a list. Now, what if I want to do something more complicated? What if I want to compute each element in its square? Well, I just say that's what I want. I want to say for each element, from 0 to 25, return a tuple. This is tuple syntax here, of I and its square. So if I show this in a grid, as expected. So, I mean, the syntax might look a little unfamiliar to you at first, but once you get the hang of it, you see how easy it is to do these kinds of tasks. Okay, what if I wanted to filter out the odd numbers and only show the squares of even numbers between 0 and 25? Well, I get to use the pipe operator. You can think of the pipe operator as similar to like a Unix pipe, the shell pipe command, right? Where you take the output of one command and pass it into the input of another command. The nice thing about the pipe operator is that you get to write your code in the order in which it's applied rather than backwards. So here I get to say, take the list 0 to 25, filter out the odd number, so basically only give me those who mod 2 are 0. Map just means transform the list into a different list of tuples and show it in a grid. Like so. So basically, think back to math, right? G of f of x. It's not how we think as programmers, right? It's much more natural to say x pipe f pipe g. That's what the pipe operator is. It lets you write it in the order it happens. All right, so that was just to get your feet wet. And I made some very bold claims originally. And now I will substantiate them. First, I'm going to explain the problem it is that I claim to have solved. Then I promise I will show you demos. With F-sharp 3.0, we've given you several language features that together give you a concept that we call information-rich programming. Essentially, these features let you program against data sources in a much more natural and easy way than ever before. So, if I claim to have solved the problem, I should first get you to agree it was a problem in the first place. So I'll introduce two pretty simple, uncontroversial propositions. Number one, we live in an information society. Just think over the past 10 years, the kind of information that you get on a regular basis, I mean, information you may not even want, like stupid Facebook updates of people you went to high school with. But it also does change the way we compute. There is useful information there, too. The kinds of programs that we were using just 10 years ago are really quite different from the ones that we are writing and using now. Number two, our languages are information sparse. This is by design. We're talking about general purpose languages. If I have a general purpose language, I don't need to tell it about Facebook and friends and status and whether or not someone's in a relationship. That doesn't make sense. I couldn't possibly define a schema for everything in the world. However, it turns out that because the world is so information rich, this becomes more and more of an issue because it becomes harder and harder to define schemas because you need to do it more often. Essentially, when you're using a statically typed language, there's kind of a mismatch, right? You have this schema, you have to get it into a format that your language will understand. And there are ways to do this, and a lot of them will work very well in many cases. So CodeGen is one example. But really think about what you're doing. What you're doing is you're taking the schema, turning it into code, and now your language understands it, right? You haven't made your language understand your data. You've turned your schema into code. And the reason that this is an important point is that each of these tools has to be integrated into the IDE, into the build process, into source control, and when the schema changes, you need to be sure that you ran the CodeGen tool. It's just adding more friction. It's not as fluid. Sometimes it's even worse. You don't even get to do CodeGen. You have to upcast object, parse strings, which is just pretty sad when you're using a statically typed language, because that should make your experience better, not worse. I talked about before how we live in an information society and the kinds of programs we write over the past 10 years, programs we're writing and using are changing. This is a graph that illustrates this. This is showing the number of open APIs, approximately, that have been available over the past 10 years. It's very interesting to notice the trends. On the left, you see eBay. On the right, you start seeing very well-established companies, MasterCard, Sears, American Express. Everything is moving in this direction. Why does this matter? You all know this. Why does this matter? This just increases the chance that any given API will be new to you. Therefore, when it's harder to use, it'll just be that much harder for you to get your job done. I know you all know and love IntelliSense. So you can think of type providers in F# as IntelliSense for data. And when I say data, actually, I mean your data schema. So now when you press, currently with CodeGen tools, you press dot, you get the code completion from the stuff you've CodeGen'd. What if you didn't have to do that step? What if you could just plug in your own CodeGen tool as though it were a CodeGen tool in a very natural way? Now I'm going to give you an example of why sometimes you couldn't even do CodeGen if you wanted to. Freebase. You may not have heard of it. It's a Creative Commons graph database, and it's gigantic. Think of it as Wikipedia with a schema. Now, it is not quite up to the quality of Wikipedia, which you will see in my demo. But it is extremely interesting to see all the connections that you have when you have a graph database that anyone can edit. So, if you look at the bottom, in yellow, there's Steve Wozniak. And you just go a few hops up in purple and you get Academy Awards. Those are two completely different types of entities. So you can see when you have these graph connections, it would be very hard to figure out what's the best way to cut off the graph and what parts to encode in your language. I promised a demo. Here it is. All right. In order to use, a type provider is basically an assembly that implements an interface with about 5 methods. And that basically lets you plug into the type checker and the compiler, and by extension, the IDE. So here, this #r is just a way of saying that this script file references this assembly, similar to how a project file has a reference. This is just saying, I'm using this as an extension to my language. Use this in order to find types. Then I'm defining a type abbreviation that's saying, this is how you get to the start of all this stuff in Freebase data. Some of this part here is an artifact of the namespace, and this is just what the class that we've defined that tells the compiler how to get types. And this particular sample that we've written goes and pulls down the schema of Freebase as soon as you start typing. So, web data dot. See, it would be a little bit more dramatic if it went slower, but I'm using an Ethernet connection, so it's too fast. I apologize. But when I use Wi-Fi, it takes a second. It literally is pulling it down right now. If you guys had commit rights to the schema of Freebase, you could go in and change this completion list. Not the data, the schema, mind you. And it's like all kinds of random things. I mean, it's Wikipedia with a schema, right? So there's things like boxing, broadcast computers, conventions. And so I was looking through this list, and I was thinking, what would be an interesting one to browse? And I saw celebrities. Now, I don't actually know much about celebrities. I mean, I would never read those celebrity magazines. I see them sometimes in the dentist office. I don't look at them. But I just want to be up to date with popular culture. So I think I will use Freebase in order to do this. So I think celebrities is probably going to tell me things like what movies they've been in, why they're famous. Think back to Wikipedia again. Instead, it's going to tell me what drugs they're addicted to, what crimes they've committed, where they went to rehab in order to recover from those drug addictions, and completely random things. And then at the bottom, I saw super couple. I'm like, what is this? I don't even know what that is. I've never even heard that term before. My IntelliSense is telling me information about popular culture, which would be highly relevant at cocktail parties. Let me tell you what a celebrity super couple is. This is important information. A celebrity super couple, also known as a power couple or dynamic duo, is a popular or financially wealthy pairing that captivates and intrigues its observers beyond normal expectations. What the hell? show grid. I got so distracted by that. Show grid. All right, so I had the thing where I right-clicked and did execute an interactive. Note that there's a keyboard shortcut, and I always use this. So when you see things happening, it's because I'm so used to using that keyboard shortcut. So I'll say execute an interactive. Freebase, please tell me what a super couple is. Taking a second to come up, which I hope helps you believe that it really is going to the web, and you get an idea of what they're talking about. Sonny and Cher, Posh and Bex, Tomcat, Bennifer, important information. Notice that the images are coming up, and notice that they are images. This control here, I mentioned before, if it looks bad, it's because it's for the demo. It actually is generic. It is just looking at the types of each of those fields, and using reflection is deciding what to show. So it knows that the main image field is actually an image, and it displays it as an image. This is just showing you how you are getting strongly typed data. Anyway, Brangelina is in here, so I know that this data is trustworthy. Let's move on to something slightly more interesting. Now, I did say this is world edited. It might not surprise you that the schema for fictional universes is extremely detailed. Not only does it tell me about fictional objects, it tells me how to destroy them and what can destroy them. Oh, there we go, loading description. Now, hope it works. Come on. I think it's a very long description. Sometimes I have to hover off the tooltip. Oh, there we go. There we go. Look at how much information is in my tooltip. This is ridiculous. And then the other thing I love, my tooltip is saying welcome. Please use my API. Okay. And so I'm going to show you just another example of data that you might care more about. And what this is going to do is basically pull down, if you look at this incredibly long tooltip, it's basically going to give me a list of all the fictional universes that it knows about. And let me show it in a grid. Ah, I didn't explain the backtick, which is useful here. So, the identifier fictional universes has a space in it. That is not a legal character in an identifier. F sharp, even before type providers, had a feature where you could use double backtick to use other characters within an identifier. And it turns out it's really helpful in this case. So let's make sure that they know their fictional universes. I had to truncate this, by the way, otherwise it would like not show anything. There's a ton of things here. All right, so Buffyverse, Xenaverse, Star Trek. See how it's taking longer? Sherlock Holmes. And then there's things I hadn't heard of. Just think what happens when you have Wikipedia and a schema. All right. Now, this example was mainly to show you how this solution scales. Before I forget, I said F-sharp code is concise. This is the amount of code you'd have to write just to pull out the boiling point and atomic mass of a chemical element. It's not fun to write this stuff. But because Freebase has a schema, and we can translate that schema into types and tell the F-sharp type system how to understand it, we don't have to write all this code. Actually, I'm going to get it off my screen so that you don't get too upset. Say I have my own custom log file format, just on my local machine. No one else has the same schema. I can just say, these are what the types are. There's all kinds of type providers out there. My team is working on things like a Facebook type provider where you're in your editor and you're actually bringing up people's names and looking through their relationships. But you can also do real things. I will show you real things. So this was just to show you that CodeGen doesn't always work. It does work in some cases. I'm not saying you shouldn't use it. I'm just saying think about the limit of this problem. The other thing, though, that is relevant is that we didn't have to wait. The reason in this case that we didn't have to wait is that the Freebase type provider didn't actually create type definitions for me. It created pretend ones that then got compiled away. So they were erased. And I didn't have to, so contrast this with when you code generate your entire schema, then you compile your, or at least type check your entire schema, and then you compile and run your project, because other than F#, the other languages in Visual Studio don't currently have an interactive, and then you can get started. So you get type checking, and you can detect schema change. Like I said, if you all had commit rights to the schema of Freebase, I know it's cheating for me to say this because I think you have to be on the list in advance, but you would change what was showing up in my IntelliSense. And you get all the great tooling. So it's just more integrated, it's more natural, it's more fluid, it's more code focused. And I know you guys do not like opening up wizards and dialog boxes. You want to be in the code. Okay, so I mainly chose Freebase because it's fun. You all are probably not writing apps that are listing all the fictional universes that some random people in the world care about. Let's look at something more realistic. Let's say I'm a startup, and I want to advise people on where they should live based on their demographic information, like their age, how much money they make, how big their family is, how far they're willing to drive to get to work, that kind of thing. And then you put in this information, and, you know, for instance, I think I had put in someone who was very wealthy, and it said that they should live on Mercer Island, which, for those of you who aren't from the Washington, King County area, it is a very, very, very nice place to live. So how am I even going to go about writing this application? Well, first off, I need a way to get demographic data on zip codes. For this example, I'm going to just look at Seattle, King County. It's hard-coded into my demo, but I could look at all the U.S. Switch to VGA2. Turns out there is a good way to do this. Windows Azure Marketplace. You may not have heard about this. This is growing. The number of data sources is growing. But imagine that you could subscribe to and pay for data sources as you do other applications. And there's all kinds of things that are interesting for various applications. So here, I'm thinking, okay, demographics, I'll look for census data. And it turns out there is a trial version where I can get a limited number of queries per month and pull down data that's taken from the U.S. Census in 2010. And the way it would work, basically, is you say sign up with your Windows Live ID, you would connect. Then you would go down here. You'd see details. If you weren't using F#, you would take this, go to this page, read this page, figure out what tool to run, And then you would also go down here and you would see, okay, this is what it's giving me. And so you might even end up in a situation where you're like copying and pasting column names. I don't think any of you will remember these column names after a few seconds, but you'll see them again. All right, so in my demo, what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you the fact that I'm getting live IntelliSense. Let me close these two guys. All right, so here I have an MVC3 application written in C#, which is very typical of how these applications are written. The interesting thing here is that it references, well, fsharp.core and a library, fslib, which is an assembly that has fsharp code in it. And that's where I do all of the interesting matching. For demographics, all right, give it a second. I should get squiggles. What? Aha, perfect, thank you. It's like, I don't know what you're talking about. So this is a built-in type provider that that ships with Visual Studio that lets you connect to an OData service. And then it gives you back something that just looks like a regular type, and then you can pull down details from it. But here, of course, it's saying, I don't know what you're talking about because I didn't even put in a URL. It's saying, where's your schema? We'll paste in, oops, did I not copy? Copy, paste it in, wait a few seconds, pulling down the schema. It's fast because it's only pulling down the schema, mind you, no data here. It's just pulling down all those column names. And it all works. Now here, the cool thing is, if I don't know how to use this, I can actually just use IntelliSense to help me. So for instance, if I want to see how to get started, it's telling me, well, this is how you do it. And by the way, you may need to set the credentials property. And then if I go over here, it says, oh, by default, no credentials are set. So what do I do next? I set my credentials. I talked about those column names and how probably none of you remember them. Do any of you remember the exact spelling of the column? Sorry, the field name for the state? Probably not. All right. Well, my IntelliSense will tell me. It is state name. I'm just restricting it to Washington State and King County because I didn't want to cache the zip code results for the entire U.S. in my application because that's just more work. County name. King. So this will basically pull out the zip codes from King County in Washington, which for those of you who aren't from there, is that the county where Redmond, Seattle, and all are located. Now, remember when I talked about list expressions and that they're useful? Here's a case where it really is useful to have it. So I get back data from a query, and it may not be in the format that I want. Now, the details of this aren't important, but you can see I'm doing some conversions here. In this case, it's pretty simple. Say something is an integer, I change it to a decimal. Some things are nullable, I change them to non-nullable. But you can imagine that you might do some interesting transformations to turn in the raw data into the format that you want to use to then process. Using the pipe operator, I can now just sort. And I say, this is how you sort. You use the city concatenated with the zip code as a string concatenation in order to do the sorting. So this is, again, going back to the declarative nature of F#. All right, so this is what I'm trying to implement. And I said maximum driving distance to work. It would be pretty lame if I did straight line distance, wouldn't you say? Let's do it for real. Let's do driving distance. Well, as returned to us by a web service, Bing Maps has a WSDL service that lets you get driving directions. And this is the particular service route that you would use. And in order to connect to this ordinarily, you go to add service reference and go through all those steps. But here, you don't have to do that. The cool thing is, let me undock that. The cool thing is, notice how this definition looked really similar to my OData one. So like when I keep moving on, writing more code, I don't even have to think about how exactly I'm connecting to this service. So it's just fewer details that I have to keep in mind. There is also a built-in SQL type provider that lets you specify connection string either directly or from a configuration file. And that looks very similar to this one as well. So it happens that they have some very complicated type abbreviations. This code is not something you need to really understand, but this is very similar to what you'd write in C#. It is about half as long, though, just because it's more concise. It's doing the same thing. But I don't have to go to web pages in order to understand what to do. Ordinarily, there is this whole SOAP reference on MSDN that explains each of the Bing operations that you can do and has text that explains how to do it. So you're switching back and forth between your editor and your web browser, which isn't fun. So here, I've built up a route service, and I have a route request. And I'm like thinking, well, what can I do with a route service? Let's find out. I could calculate it. I could calculate it asynchronously. Or I could just do it for major roads. I had not ever used this API before I started writing this demo, and it was much easier for me to get started than if I had to go through and read a bunch of web pages. Now here I'm pulling out the results, and I want to know, well, what can I get from a result? Pull that away. So you could get the bounding rectangle that represents the range of the driving directions, or you could get, say, the time in seconds. So maybe you want to make your algorithm very fancy and distinguish both between distance and time. Mine is not that fancy. So I already have this running. So let's put in some demographic information. Give me something to put in. Age?
29.
Okay. Annual income? Doesn't have to be yours.
What?
I'm sorry? 300,000. All right. Household size? No. Weird things happen when the data is not realistic. Because my algorithm is not that smart. Okay. So I did say I had restricted it to King County. So the easiest address used here is Microsoft. But I get to just write an address that Bing will understand because this gets passed to the Bing API. I don't have to process an address, figure out the zip codes in the right format. I get to just use the web service the way it was intended. And how long do we want to drive to work? Let's say we want a short distance to work, 5 minutes. Okay, this is going to take a second. That's because I didn't cache any of these results. So basically, for each of the zip codes in King County, is calculating the driving distance from that zip code to this work address. It'll take a little bit. I'll leave it over here. It'll be soon. All right. Queue up the next thing. It's always fun when it's unexpected. Well, yes. I'm glad you said $300,000. That's why I told you to live in Mercer Island. And I'll explain the bottom part later. And it's telling me things that the census actually records, like how educated people are. Apparently, they're extremely educated on Mercer Island. And I can click on the zip code, and it just goes to the Bing API, Bing Maps, the center of that zip code, as defined by their algorithm. All right. Let's go back, reload. Now, let's say I want to give the user some more interesting information. What other web services could I use? It turns out you could use Bing Search to come up with business searches. This is the right one. The service URIs are all slightly different from each other, but this is how you search for businesses. And regular Bing Search is similar. This is actually an older version than what they have now, but this still works. Okay, so I'm just basically going to build up the query. This part is not particularly interesting, but what I've done here, and I'll run this in interactive, execute in interactive. What I've done here, could not resolve. Oh, I need to reset this one. Reset. Hopefully it'll work. It's more fun when it does. Here we go. So what I've decided to do is to be cool and show people businesses based on their age. So if you're 20, gotta show the definition. Let's say if you're 20, did it work? Taking a second. Okay, so it's gonna tell you about bars and pool halls. If you're 60 and living on Bainbridge Island, it'll skip the bars and tell you about theater and country clubs. So to prove to you, apologies. What age did we put? 20, we put in 29, right? And so it's using that same heuristic, very, very scientific heuristic that I made up myself about what people are interested in at various ages, and it's telling them where they can go drink. A small minor point about the sequence operator. Don't be scared at this mathematical formula. It's just Euclidean distance, which is why if you run my search many times, you'll see it's kind of lame. It's just basically computing straight line distance between two vectors using weights. But the key thing to note here is in math, you write things in a different order than you do in computation. With the sequence operator, you get to write the exact same operations, but in the order that they happen, which makes more sense to us as programmers. So the point of this demo was that you can combine multiple data service sources, and they all have a pretty uniform interface. I didn't show you SQL, but it does look very similar. And when anyone designs their own type provider, they can provide the same uniform interface. Of course, they can make it very awful, but that's up to them. You can see also that the interop works very nicely. I didn't show you the C# code, but there was a C# project that was written in ASP.NET that called into the F# assembly. It turns out the cloud's important. Fortunately, F# is very well suited to the cloud, as are many functional languages, because you're not forced to store state in order to do your computation. The other nice thing about F# is that you can use a feature called computation expressions. And essentially, you can add new syntax. It looks like you add new syntax into the language, but it's actually not built in. So if, you know, I had my own special way of connecting to the cloud and munging my data, I could add a cloud syntax in a library, and the user would feel like I had added new syntax to F#. And in fact, F# has two expressions that use this feature, async, which we had in 2010, and query expressions. They're not even built in, actually. They are actually in the library. I'm going to give you a concrete example of cloud computation. There's a cloud numerics library that's available from Microsoft in CTP form, and it has a bunch of numerical algorithms. I'm going to be honest with you. I think I only understand the names about 1% of them. So that's how I know it's fancy. But the cool thing is, not only can you do local computation and statistics and linear algebra and all this stuff, you can also distribute it to Azure, and it just does all the work for you. So you can even say that your array is distributed, and then you want to do a distributed computation, and it figures out how to do it for you. So I'll show you a demo here. This particular example does not require that fanciness of Azure. Also, it reduces the chances that something strange will happen in my demo, so I'm doing it locally. So all these hash Rs would be project references in your file. There's just a bunch of different DLLs that they've shipped with this library. So Let's go back to the demographics data just because we've already connected to it and pull out zip codes from California cities. And, well, what could I do with statistics? Like I said, I don't know that much about statistics, so I'm going to do the simplest thing. I hear about this 1% and this 99%. I know the 1% does not live in my zip code, but I don't actually know where they are. I'm curious. Where are they? I do understand percentile ranking. It's like one of the simplest kinds of statistical analysis you can do. So I could pull the census data into an array and pull out the top 1 percentile. And here, I'm going to pull out the top 1 percentile, either by income or home. And here, you're probably familiar with this show grid by now. And it's connecting, pulling down the census data. That's the thing that takes the longest time. Then pulling out the percentile rank. Oops. Takes a second. That's how you know I'm not cheating. So it's telling me some information here. Suspiciously, all of these homes are worth $1 million and $1. And I think I know why this is. This is a government form, and people are always honest on government forms, right? About personal information, like your driver's license, you know? They seem to be slightly more honest about their per capita income, maybe because of the IRS. I don't know. So now I know. If I am in these cities and I walk around these zip codes, people will probably know I don't live there. Not just because my hair is purple. Now, Ali, on the other hand, I told you he has a startup. If he sold it, maybe he'd want to go live in these neighborhoods. Live it up. He could use this very authoritative census data to find the best neighborhood. So, again, analytical components work well with F#. You don't have to roll your own frameworks and libraries. You can just use everything that's out there. Cloud Numerics is not intended primarily for F#. It's intended for all .NET languages. So every time there's a new framework, you can just use it with F#. By now, I hope I have convinced you. Tools matter. With F#, we are combining innovation in tools with innovation in languages, and we're giving you an integrated solution for getting multiple data sources. And the main thing here is the experience is code-focused. You don't have to run Wizard. You don't have to go read web pages. You get to just stay in your editor, and you get a consistent and uniform programming experience. Additionally, when your schema changes, remember back when I had left out that URL and it complained because it was pulling a schema that didn't exist? With F#, when my schema changes, all I do is rebuild, literally. And it tells me, your project does not match your schema. I don't have to rerun my CodeGen tool. I don't have to make sure that I synchronize when my CodeGen tool is run with when the schema might change. Of course, the schema could always change after I've compiled. That is a problem that is very, very difficult to solve. But at least, if you could have known about it in advance, F# will tell you. All right. Now, I am sure all of you either have Visual Studio 2012 RC on your machines now, or you're going to install it later this afternoon. I would like to remind you that it installs side by side with Visual Studio 2010. If you want to just try out F#, go to File, New Project, Other Languages, assuming you're not in the F# profile, Visual F#, F# Tutorial. That will make you a project that has a bunch of little snippets of F# code that walk you through the language. So, as I said, with F# 3.0, we're code-focused. Our tutorial is also code-focused. If you're using Visual Studio 2010 and you haven't installed the RC, I'm sad for you. But you can still access this older version of the tutorial with F# 2.0 features. If you want to know more information, visit fsharp.net. Thank you. All right, so I'm going to bring up the evaluation slide because I want to make sure that you all enter as many times as you can to win awesome things, including an Xbox 360 and geek merchandise. You can complete an evaluation either by scanning this tag or just going onto the website, complete speaker evaluation. If you have any questions, you can ask them now. I'll be at the Visual Studio booth later today, the whole afternoon. It's near the Porsche. Look for the Porsche. I will be near the Porsche. So I'm happy to take any questions now or after the talk. Yes? Could you be more? So the question was, the other languages have redone the template experiences. Ah, I see. So there are some templates that we don't have as many templates for F#, but we have revised it some. It is nicer. I will admit the other languages have done more with their templates. Any other questions? Yes. What if I have a really large data set? What do I do? Well, you may have heard about a CTP of Hadoop on Azure, which is basically the runtime of Hadoop, so it works well on Windows Azure. You could imagine using that kind of thing. It has .NET integration. That is the kind of way that you would program to do big data with F#. Not the only way, obviously. So that would be the MapReduce way. You could also use Cloud Numerics to do if it's statistical computation. So the technologies that are available with .NET are the ones that you'll use with F#. Any more questions? Yes. I haven't implemented one myself, but the people on my team, especially the testers, they've written their own. And the Freebase one apparently is about 500 lines of code. They wrote a Facebook type provider, I think, in 200 lines of code. The only issue they had with that one was that Facebook kept changing their API, so it would not work one day.
Like, if Alex befriends me, does that mean that then I won't compile?
No, not just that. Well, yeah, you won't compile. You won't compile because you can bring up Alex's name in your IDE. I kid you not. Generally, like, if it was something like, say, you were parsing your own custom log file format, it's not that many lines. Less than 100 lines of code, typically. Our own built-in type providers are all less than 500 lines of code. Uh-huh. Yeah. Approximately. Yeah. Actually, one of my testers exactly implemented this thing. So you should get my card. I'll email you the code. Any more questions? Nope. Thank you very much. I will see you by the Porsche.